This is a CNA podcast.
Doors are closing.
If you've never heard of the woke salaryman, then you've been living under a social media rock. Either that or your algorithm is serving you bed sheets and bubble tea instead of some of the most artfully delivered social commentary about work, money and life decisions.
Okay, I'm hardly woke, and to be honest, I live in fear of some of the more strident young people who aren't afraid to draw their fangs if I so much as say something boomerish. But I do enjoy the words and illustrations of these two talented Singaporeans. He Rui Ming does the writing and Goh Wei Chun illustrates. And together, they've got a thriving business and hundreds of thousands of followers.
Their stated goal is to help young people develop a better relationship with money. But today, we want to chat with them about work and career. We hope they can shed some light on starting out, the lessons they learned, and really what school can never teach you about the working world. Welcome both.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So what struck us when we were doing some research on both you guys is that you're both mass comm grads from Poly, and then Rui Ming, especially for you, you actually major in criminology in university, while Wei Chun did animation. So based on that, I think on CV side, it doesn't seem very cookie cutter. What exactly did you learn when you're applying for jobs based on your academic achievement, and how does that actually translate into real-world application?
So we both came from Ngee Ann Poly. I think we graduated in 2009, I'm going to say, which is very long ago. I think back then, maybe Poly diplomas weren't so readily accepted at local unis. I remember like receiving all three rejection letters at the local uni when I applied for various things there. Mm. So eventually, I got a scholarship to go overseas, and I studied at the University of Melbourne, where I learned like criminology and communication. So I mean, for me to learn about criminology, I thought it would be a cool thing because you learn about something that you haven't already learned before, because we already learned about comms in Poly already. So why do that twice? So I also felt like it added more depth to what I knew, like basically like a
But did you want to do that for a living, like become an investigator or something like that?
I thought, you know, if I didn't make it as a communicator or in media, I could I could be a policeman. Not to say policeman is a backup job,
No.
I also have
it's very cool also, yeah.
It's a pretty good job, right?
Yeah, it's good,
It's interesting.
Yeah, so it wasn't a backup, it's more like a fork in the road, you know. In general, my experience is that bigger, larger MNCs, they tend to care more about academic qualifications, especially because they get so many applicants. And many of these other applicants are very, very well qualified academically. What I found is that smaller companies, especially SMEs, startup, I'm not sure whether is it like because they got no choice or fewer applicants, so they tend to look past the academic achievements.
I think fewer applicants also, because it allows you to look deeper than just the first few lines on the resume, maybe.
Maybe got too many people apply.
But did that bother you guys? You know, did it?
No, that's the game. It bothered me at the start. I'm like, wow, I need to, because I actually have a master's. I went on to do master's in NTU also, just to get like, actually it's just to delay graduation, because I look at the job market for animators in Singapore and I'm like, wow, the salary starting is so low. And it's the nature of the industry. I don't blame anyone here or whatever. True. No, it's not like there's an evil villain that is like kind of keeping animation rates low or what, you know? So I went on to do masters and I understood actually that, I mean, your question also, Adrian, was how did I feel like my academic stuff helped in the workplace, right? I understood that, yeah, for a large part, it is that when somebody see masters, they go, ooh, masters. But in all actuality, does it actually mean anything? Mm. It does, but it's oftentimes more nuanced than one would assume. It's not like I know more stuff. Actually, what I sort of got from the academic system, especially studying a bit of postgraduate studies, right, is the academic rigor. And that can be applied to sales, for example. Sales is a very universal thing, right? So it means that, like in academia, if you want to say a statement, you have to prove it, either with a source or you did research to prove it. And they will whack you in your defense. You have to defend your thesis, right? Yeah. So they'll say, how can you say this? Who said this? So that means that in sales also, right, if I apply that rigor, right,
but in your case, you focus on art, right? Yes. So illustration.
Animation specifically.
Animation, yeah. So you kind of knew what you liked and wanted to do.
Yes, but I found out very quickly when the graduation was impending that hey, what are the, like, you know, a lot of money in the industry in Singapore. Mm. Because animation is very labor intensive.
Right.
And labor in Singapore is expensive because the cost of living is high here and the population is low. And also, regionally, right, there's a lot of animation talent. So we are competing on a more and more regional and global place with remote working, and then COVID just forcing us to do that, right? So it means our competition is not local anymore. Like. It's like regional. And Singapore is a very prosperous nation in the middle of a lot of other developing states. So as a result of that, right, in the same time zone, there's so much competition. Eh. So it's really, really difficult to fight in something that is labor intensive like animation. So that specifically makes it very hard, even though I still, in my heart of hearts, love animation.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Remy, for yourself, given that your pathway in mass communication, of course, it could lead to many different things, but ultimately you landed into content, in a way, copy as well, back in Mothership. How did that happen for you? Is it something that is through experimentation, through bouncing around, or is it something that you actually discovered much more early in your life?
Yeah, I think since young, I always care about social, political, economic issues. So I think that naturally led me to write for a new site, which was Mothership, where I felt like the work could be read by more people to have more impact. I would have been perfectly comfortable earning a decent salary in like a more B2B role, but I felt that since you already write, and the purpose to write is sometimes to reach more people.
Mass communication.
Yeah, mass communication. Yeah. So I think that led me to learn, not just be a better writer, but also learn more about the issues that I actually want to talk about. Like if I want to talk about inequality, I should read everything there is to know about inequality before I try to write something. If not, it's just like a simple rant.
Well, I think you're a mass communicator all your life, because I remember in Poly, he's also writing blogs and stuff. He tried all kinds of different things, like travel blog. Then he was telling me, oh, the secondary school one, do you want to share about that? I thought that was very interesting that you did that last time.
Oh yeah, so I used to run like a little blog in secondary school. And what I would do is basically give critics on like how the teachers were doing.
And the teachers knew this.
Okay,
blog
in retrospect, right? It was a bit of cyberbullying, and I fully acknowledge that. You know,
about your kid,
yeah. I mean, I was 14 years old. I should not have done that.
Yeah.
But I think that's when I discovered, like, hey, actually, I'm pretty good at writing. Some 30-year-old teacher reads my stuff, like some old people. Even though now I am that old person,
yeah, like his teachers would read the thing, and then like
that's the thing. I'm amazed.
It's like he had
the
some sort of power.
Yeah, and then would it affect your grades?
Oh, I mean, there was one instance that the principal told me to stop writing it. They said like, oh, it's defamation. Because I didn't always write good things about them. So right. I remember my dad coming down to the principal office.
Oh, so serious.
Yeah, right? And he asked me like, hey Ming, are you going to stop writing a blog? I say, no, I'm not going to stop writing the blog. And eventually, what I did, I think I just self-centered a bit, and I shifted to more current affairs rather than like,
also, you pivoted yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rather than school gossip.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
maybe
right.
Because school gossip, everyone can do, right? So yeah. Right now, we shift a bit more.
So those were early lessons about writing for a major news outlet, right?
Yeah,
it was bullying at
say.
Scale, right?
Yeah.
Well, you used the internet to bully at scale.
Yeah, I think, yes.
No, but it's
yes,
more like yes, critique yes. And like commentary kind of thing, right?
Yeah, no, but I think that's when I found out like the power of words, especially if you can write well. Because I'm not a very natural speaker. So I often find it better to write.
Okay lah.
Yeah. No,
don't
it's
put
okay.
Yourself
hey, don't do it as a podcast. You're making it weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry,
so I'm actually surprised at like how far you can get in life if you're just a decent writer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So Mothership basically gave you the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. So I think the culture there allowed me to write like on a broad range of topics.
Right.
And also take risks. I remember like writing one piece where it was more satirical. I think we wrote like the late Lee Kuan Yew's words in the form of like how different authors would write it. Like how would Lee Kuan Yew sound like if J.K. Rowling actually wrote
his
words?
Speech, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Or like if yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Hey, thanks.
It's great.
Even though it's 7 years too late.
Your partner is really very supportive, by the way.
He is very supportive. Great, yeah.
Okay, so let's pivot a little bit more about the work aspect. One of the things I find about young people today is that they are very competitive. They really work super hard. They have side hustles left, right, and center. They really go after internships. So their resume is like very, to me, quite exhausting. But they feel that they need this. And then when they land that so-called dream job with a big pay and they find out, oh my God, I'm a corporate slave now. Do you ever think that the hardest transition from school to work is actually when reality hits?
I think the idea of corporate slave, I sort of got that for a bit. I was also at Marshall because Riming got me to join the company. And it was a great experience. And I eventually left to go and do something that paid me more money.
Mm.
And at the time, especially as an artist, I'm like, wow, I'm such a sellout, man. Like, I'm doing this for money. But actually, in hindsight also, having done that for a while allowed me to have enough savings so that when we started the Work Salaryman together, then we're like, hey, can we go full-time? Should we go full-time, right? Mm-hmm. I had the resources to go full-time. So the idea of like being a corporate slave, look, I get it. I get the cynicism behind it. I'm like that too. As an artist, the gift and the curse of creativity is that you can appreciate creative things in such a sublime way that sometimes creative things can make you tear up and stuff. So you can experience things well. But the curse is that if you're not doing it, it makes you feel miserable.
Mm.
So the expectation of what the workplace is like is very important. And sometimes you have to not see it as I'm a corporate work slave. I get that. I completely get it. But it could be that I'm doing this now, so I'm gathering resources to do something else later.
Right.
So it's okay to sell out for a while. It doesn't mean that your friends are going to judge. I mean, if your friends judge you for that, then maybe they shouldn't be your friends, because you have to understand this is important for me. I got debt to pay off or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is not a permanent label. Like, the corporate slave thing is not a permanent label.
But there are some people who stay the course much longer. Don't you think so? Like, they put up with it.
Yeah. So either that is indecision where I got no other thing to do, then I just do this. Or
because it pays well,
I inflated my lifestyle, so I need this.
Right.
So that could be that also, because how much you make is only one side of the thing. The other 50% is how much you spend. So if you feel like I'm a slave, and that's sort of what a slave means, you have no choice.
Mm.
Perhaps that slavery is not just like the corporate side of things, or like society costing a certain amount, because Singapore is quite expensive.
That's true.
It could also be your choices and what you are choosing to spend. And you might have more freedom if you just desire less things.
Right.
Yeah, I can see from the other angle, so I think.
Yeah.
What do you think, Remy?
Yeah, I think when I just graduated, I was very left-wing. I was very anti-work. I always like love work-life balance. I want to do as little work as possible. Then after that, I realized like, I think maybe 7 months in, like, it wasn't doing me any favors. I didn't enjoy my job. That is damn miserable. So I began looking for articles. So like, oh, how do I actually have financial freedom? I think I quickly realized that the important thing was to build up your capital in the beginning rather than trying to get rich quick through some sort of investment and stuff. And that realization made me realize that, you know, I have to be someone with valuable skills that people are willing to pay for. Then I can command a higher salary. Then somewhere down the line, after I do the work, after I do the grunt stuff, then I can kind of take it chill a little bit.
Right. And then you have choice.
Yeah. And everyone goes through this whole phase.
Right.
I think the important thing is that you maneuver yourself in the position to have the maximum choices available to you at any point of time.
And given the experience that you guys have now in doing your own thing versus the corporate things that you have, what are the key differences that you are observing between the two? What is the good thing and the bad thing about being a salaryman?
I think the good thing is definitely stability. I think there's also a lack of risk. So, for example, whether or not the business makes money, I know as a salaryman, I'll be paid this amount of money every month. But if I run a business, that month the company isn't making money.
You don't get paid.
Yeah, I don't get paid. And I actually lose money because my employees still need to get paid.
Mm.
So the risk is definitely higher. But also, in terms of pluses, right? Because you are the one bearing the risk, you don't need to answer to a lot of people. I mean, I have to answer the waitress because he's my partner and we are in this together. And also, you kind of have more of the reward because you are the one who take on the risk. So I think that's the biggest tool for me. What do you think, waitress?
For me, when I was a salaryman, like, I remember I was at the bus stop at like 8 a.m. and I saw somebody in his early 30s like running, like jogging in the morning. And I'm like, who is this person? Like, what does he do for a living? Don't he work one? Like, how do I do that? So that was always the biggest difference that I wanted. I wanted the ability to control my own time.
Mm.
And then actually when we went full time, it was in 2020, middle of the COVID. So I was like, wow, I got all this freedom. I can. So I raft sometimes. I will go rafting in the East Coast Park at like 8 a.m. Then I do my work later, lah, you know, yes, so I work until like 2 a.m. plus. So it's not like I just chill every day. Lah,
right? You think you need to explain what rafting is?
So rafting is when I blow up.
I was just going
to
ask.
Yeah, I blow up a boat and then I row out to sea.
You blow up back a boat? Like an entire boat?
Yeah. Wow. It's quite small one. Okay,
blow is not explosion. It's an inflatable.
Okay. Yeah, inflated. Sorry. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Inflatable
raft. You should do that for your kids.
Yeah. It's quite fun. But you know, with COVID coming around, then everybody had that work-life thing for a while. And it took sort of the novelty out of it for me because all the other salarymen also were able to do that because you just kind of like reported based on productivity, not attendance, right? Mm-hmm. That's how like we quantify work has changed. But I also feel now that we are in the middle. It's always like the thing where you want this thing, then when you get it, it completely changes, right? Yeah. It feels like that now also where the allure of what I thought it would be great about starting your own business has faded. But what I appreciate now are the more subtle things, like being able to take on the problems that I want to choose to take on. There are infinite array of problems that every business faces. But sure. When you are a salaryman or an employee, you might not always get to choose what to take on. And I really relish being able to choose that problem. I was also telling Remy a lot, like, if the woke salaryman was to go bankrupt or collapse, which is a topic we talk about all the time.
Yes, I'm going to touch right now.
And it's the like, has been in this case, right, being a salaryman is not a problem. There's no loss of pride. I don't feel ashamed about having to go back and work for somebody. Right. It's just that if I have some financial flow and stability, I can choose the organizational problems that I want. I would relish, really relish being part of a big company like Lego or IBM or Dell and really going there to solve problems, and that would be my fun in life. I can see that also as a possible version. It's not about the money. It's just that I have enough of it to not worry about it, and I can take my time to wait for the right opportunity.
Yeah. I think one of the good things about running your own business is so you can be the change you want to see in the world. Everyone talks about these companies that like you have to stay overtime so that your boss knows you're performing, the boss micromanages you, doesn't give you enough off days. The nice part of being a business owner is that you can set the rules. You can tell your team like, okay, you know what? You guys get 21 days of leave. You guys can work from home 3 days a week.
But also, you don't necessarily need to, I mean, just to disclaim, you don't need to be a business owner to have that, because there are some people who have that kind of relationship and trust with their employees.
In a corporate setting, right?
Exactly.
It depends on the boss. Yeah. But that's down to luck, right?
Luck, I mean, and also you earn the trust.
Yeah, also luck, and also like the organization you choose. Because there are bad bosses out there, and you need a certain level of privilege or kind of like...
You have to earn it.
Or a certain amount of wealth to be able to choose who you work with.
Hi, my name is Steve Lai.
And I'm Teresa Tang.
And we are the hosts of the new podcast, CNA Correspondent.
From New York to Bangkok, join us as we kick back and chat with our colleagues across the globe about the latest news developments.
Look out for our weekly episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'd like to go back to the moment when the thought of the work salaryman even occur in your head. How did that actually come about? The deliberation in between, and what was the trigger moment that got you all thinking, okay, let's do it?
Yeah, so I kind of started the work salaryman. Then I got Weichen on it at a later stage, I think like 3 months after.
Yep.
So when I started it, I was actually in advertising. I think I was working 14-hour days on work that I didn't really believe in. I mean, this is no fault to the advertising agency itself, because advertising needs you to sell things you don't believe in all the time. So when I was there, I was like, well, this is damn rubber, right?
This is damn rubber.
I was like, what can I do? There is something that I know, something I believe in, and something that could help people. Then I thought, like, actually, I've been on this financial independence thing for 4 years now at that time. You know? Why not I try creating a blog or I write something? So I think during one of the rare weekends off, I think it was like Chinese New Year or something, everyone went to Pai Nian.
Yeah, ad agencies shut down during Chinese New Year, right?
Pai Nian is do visiting. Yeah, then I went to write an article about how to save $100,000
before
I turn 30.
Yeah.
And after that, I shared it on this personal finance page called Seedly. And then it got like 500 shares. So I was like, hey, you know, we might be on to something here. So after that, I asked Wei Chun, like, hey, you know what? I did this thing, it's very wordy, the graphics, like, I anyhow put together one, but you as an artist, maybe you can put something together nicer, and maybe you'll go...
Basically draw some illustrations to accompany the text. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Then I think Wei Chun, he...
I sat on it for a while, because you're not my boss, and then like, you're not paying me also.
Sure.
Like, what is this? Like, I'm your saikang designer, is it? You know, so, but eventually when I drew it, then, you know.
He did it, and then I think the first post got like, I think 6 or 7K shares.
Which is huge
from
on 500. Facebook.
500.
Yeah, and then from there, we just kept doing.
Then we went like, hey, this could be something. But just also to dispel the idea that it's one spark, one moment of brilliance that bond this thing. It's not like that also, because we have also on our own been trying to start something of our own for years before that. I have my own comic page. She would write articles on medium.com. And then also we would socially meet up and the topic of conversation will always invariably become like, hey, how to earn money, hey, how to escape the rat race, hey, how to start a company. So it's something that's been brewing for very, very long. It seems like it was one post that exploded, but behind that is like years of just trying and failing and trying and failing and trying and failing.
Yeah, and also like our experiences and mothership, which kind of taught us a lot about what content works on online space.
Right.
It's about your time in the medtech firm, talking about like possibly niche topics and approaching them with like empathy, perspective. And also like my time in advertising, where I kind of like learn what not to do, what kind of content people don't care about.
So you
put all this together, and then that's when the Woke Cerebrum was born, I guess.
So this is what struck me, I mean, you guys are so talented, right? Because writing is not something anyone can do, right? I mean, I'm definitely not illustration and drawing.
I'm not the best artist, so I'll be the first to say.
Yeah.
I'm also not the best artist.
I know, but
you're not, yeah. I'm a bit closer, but no offense.
Okay, this bromance is getting...
No, it's not bromance. Very...
No, but okay.
If it was, you'll be okay also.
Yeah.
But my question is kind of the vast majority of young people out there, right? So at what point do you think, when you're thinking, okay, you know what, I can't take this anymore, I have to leave. And you don't really have something that's brewing.
Yeah.
But how would you suggest when someone asks you that?
Is this like mental health-wise? I mean, is the context of the question?
No, in terms of the work. Have I reached this point and what's next? So when do you know that switch where, okay, maybe it's time for me to try something else?
Yeah, I think it's best not to choose how to live your life like on a schedule. So it shouldn't be something like, oh, by 30, I must do this. By 32, then I must change to be manager or something like that.
Right.
I'd rather people constantly be aware of their mental health, how much they're being paid, their current lifestyle, what's enough for them. And after that, make a decision based on those factors. For me, I always prioritize like mental and physical health quite highly, definitely more than money. Because once those two go, your ability to earn money will be compromised. So I recommend that you can work, but make sure those two are always protected.
Right.
For myself, before I leave any job, I always make sure I have financial stability so that I do not need to tolerate any damage to my mental or physical health.
But I suppose also maybe another facet to what you're asking is that if as a young person, I feel sort of the hunger to do my own thing or to try and reach a next level of something, right? It's not automatically that entrepreneurship is the next level of being a salaryman, because you can get a lucrative and very nice life out of being an employee. But if you have the hunger for it, if you always have this, should I have tried something and you might regret it if you don't kind of thing, I suggest that everybody who feels that hankering or that sort of itch to do it should try it if you get the opportunity. And it is a luxury, unfortunately. It's a luxury because you have to take the risk to do it, and people can't take risks without safety nets and without parachutes and stuff. Because if you do it without saving, you try it with no plan, you might fail, and the consequences can set you back a lot in terms of your savings, you know? Like just to invest like 50k to start a business or something like that. So if you have that itch, right, the best thing to do is to make a plan and then try it, and also be okay with exiting to understand, hey, I tried it, it's not for me, or this one failed, and move on. And I just fear that a lot of people also, because of this hustle thing with this Instagram people posting about hashtag entrepreneurship and all that, they are just so caught up in being it that they don't dare to step out also. It takes bravery to also do that, and people should always understand. And I always tell myself that all the time, like, Woke Cerebrum, and okay lah, then I got a kick-ass portfolio out of it, find another job, then just move on. Don't be too damaged with the reputation. Like, oh, people know me as an entrepreneur, I must keep trying.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there's also something to be said about you not needing to pursue it as your full-time job. You can always pursue it at the side. Some people will say like, oh, you know, but my boss doesn't give me work-life balance. So maybe it's about choosing a place. Maybe you get paid less or something, or maybe you find like a nicer boss, and after that you can try it on the side.
So change your circumstances so that you can try things.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Sometimes this might mean getting less salary. Maybe
How we did it was we worked overtime, no? So we would do job from 9 to 5, go back home, watch Netflix, maybe one episode with the girlfriend / wife. Then 9 p.m. to 2 a.m, I think for almost a year, we were doing Woke Cerebrum every day.
So you could get by on very little sleep, clearly?
No, we couldn't. In fact, I told him, like, dude, if this doesn't work out in the next 6 to 9 months, I'm out. I can't do this. Like, my wife is angry at me. I'm not getting enough sleep. Like, I don't know what I'm doing this for. If there's no money coming in, I cannot do this anymore. I will quit.
So lucky for you guys, it worked out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I think something that's mentioned here is also that supportive family, that ecosystem to help you move things forward. Yeah. I remember when I first started my first business, I was fortunate that my girlfriend slash wife now was very supportive. Maybe she did not overthink. She's just like, I'll just do whatever
she
you
never
want,
get angry at you at all.
She didn't. Probably we were all too young to really think about it.
She got angry later.
Angry later.
I missed out on my youth.
Now very different. Now when I want to start another business, it's like, you sure not? The kids how? You know, that kind of stuff. Having said that, I think the supporting ecosystem is very important. Have you encountered any friction, maybe parents you mentioned friends, supportive friends earlier on, or maybe some mentors who said, are you sure you want to do this or not? And how do you handle that?
My wife is great and she was very supportive throughout also, but I think it's just not good on the relationship. And I think if I had kids early, no way I'm doing this. I'll be an employee now. Not that that's a bad thing, but no way I would take the risk to do this. But it's not like saying start early also, because I've also had friends who start later. They have kids first. Then when the kids 18,
that works
move out,
too, right? Once you're settled, you can pursue your
Because actually the average age of somebody founding a successful company, actually, right, is quite late on. It's like 45 years old. The average age of the successful company, and success was defined in that study as the company survived through a certain period and then became profitable.
Right.
And I understand why it's so sexy, right? The idea of a Mark Zuckerberg, teenager, come out of school, 30, under 30, then make this thing that changes the whole world. But most companies' stories are not like that. We just don't see those because they are normal.
Yep.
They are not extraordinary. And
selection
then we see
bias,
survivorship bias.
Survivorship bias.
There's so many that just fail. And sometimes I was also wondering, like, is the woke salaryman our magnum opus? Is this the best thing that we're going to do? And if it is, I should be okay with it. I shouldn't live in the shadow of this. And next time I'll try my own thing. Or it could be that this is just one of the things that we will start. Then next time we split up, we argue or something. Then he go on to start his own business sometime else when he's 45 years old. And then I start my own.
How often do you guys argue?
Argue, like serious argument, I think not very often.
Very rare. But we feel strongly for the story. So we'll discuss the stories. But it always comes from a place of good. Like I always trust that whatever he's saying, he's trying to make the story better. I'm trying to make the story better. But when it comes to business decisions, a lot of time we are
aligned.
We argue on the story mainly. Should we say it this way? What's the implication of saying this way? If we say it this way, who will complain? You know?
Or is this idea like too crowded?
Yes.
This content too crowded, there are two ideas.
Yes.
Now why try and say, are we trying to say different things?
It's always creative.
I think on the topic of that, it's very good to have like a co-founder to kind of have embarked on this journey with you, because I understand that many people find entrepreneurship lonely because it is. Because once you become an entrepreneur, very few people will understand what you're going through, except other entrepreneurs. I mean, you can go complain to your friend, you know, this month the client did this, did that. And then they're like, oh, but then, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you know.
You make so much money.
Yeah, make so much money. You should understand that this is part of it.
Yeah.
So, and the other, you can kind of become like very alienated.
Right.
Yeah, so I think having a supportive network or a co-founder, it's always a pretty good idea. Yeah. I'm grateful for you.
I'm grateful for you too. We're too sappy. Sorry.
This bromance.
We are grateful for each other.
Sorry.
I'd like to touch on your audience. Although before the recording, we mentioned it actually caters to quite a large demographic, including myself. I'm in my mid-40s and I also review your content. Yes, and one of the one of the pieces that I actually really enjoyed was the part about should I or should I not give parents allowance? I was actually at this point in time where I was really stretched for money.
Really?
And I felt very bad because I think traditionally we have this mindset, especially from our parents, that you owe me one, you need to give me. But I think after reading it, after going through the comic, it really opened up my eyes. But back to your audience, majority of the content, it is still geared towards, I would say, the Gen Z, the younger generation. And given you have put up so much content, looked at the different kind of metrics, the traffic that comes in, what do you think are the key things that actually resonated more with this particular crowd? And also another question is, what is the kind of misconception that you think people constantly have among this group of people?
What I've seen is that maybe it's also an extension from the millennial generation where we were called strawberries a lot, but maybe that happens in every generation.
Yeah.
I feel like with social media and short form content, like the idea of success is very warped, especially with regards to like financial also. Like like in the past 3 years we've seen an explosion of interest in investment, and particularly investing in very risky stuff, like the whole GameStop saga, the crypto thing, and then as a riskier subset of crypto, NFT is becoming a thing. And I'm sort of worried about the cacophony of being able to earn a lot of money very quickly And it makes it, not say harder to do our job, but we always impress. We are very uncle way of sort of advocating for advice. We'll say like, take it slow. Time is your best asset that you have as a young person.
Mm.
So investing is not going to be the one that will make it for you. Earning power is going to be the one that will make it for you. And
skills,
you can control.
I suppose,
yeah,
right?
And skill is something you can control,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You can control that yourself. It just looks very long. And then when you hear singular stories like survivorship bias of this young kid who's 23 years old and retired with $5 million from trading crypto, you gravitate towards that. But you have to understand the statistical likelihood of that happening.
Mm.
That's what I'm worried about. But I mean, this is young people. It's just that young people are always like that, right? When I was young, I was like that too. It's just that in this particular environment right now, it shapes them to be a certain way. Like we hear all this thing about the great resignation also. And there's this like, I teach at NTU sometimes. And what they've done, for example, with the COVID thing is that they have made the internship shorter.
Mm.
And all of the internships, which is your basically your first exposure in the working world, right? It is all remote. So they feel like, oh, work should be a very, like, work from home, work from anywhere, all this WFO, WFA, WH thing all coming out, right? They are graduating in the workplace in an environment where COVID has disrupted the whole thing and you shouldn't get used to it right now. That's what I would
so
keep
meaning
a lookout for.
It will not be a permanent reality?
Probably not. It might be. It might be. I also don't know. But
right.
It probably won't be. We'll settle
like
into somewhere
from
in the middle.
I think on the topic of work from home, I think it needs more nuance. It's not to say we are against work from home. Let's say you're a new employee, right? To assume work from home 5 days a week is a bit much.
Yeah.
In my opinion, as both an employee and an employer, work from home is a privilege that should be earned. You show that you can be trusted to work remotely, do your job. Then it's reasonable to ask your employer, okay, you know what, can you give me 2 days off a week?
Yeah.
I think the problem is when people take it as a given right, you know. I want to work from home. I think that sort of bargaining power only applies to a very small minority of the workforce.
Yeah. Mm.
This is not to say we are against work from home because I think taking care of employees' needs are important. Nowadays, with both parents working at the same time, it's even more important to be flexible with workplace arrangements to attract the best talent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I do think that if a young person demands that work from home is
a default option,
default option.
Yeah, yeah. It's not very realistic.
It's not that it's wrong or anything, but it will limit the number of jobs they can get hired at.
Yeah.
And that needs to be taken into account.
Yeah.
Not saying like it's terrible or what, but if you demand this, you should be aware of the consequences.
Sure. Mm.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's not all bit of roses as what people would
definitely
see from the outside.
Roses got thorns also, you know.
That's true.
It
that's
looks
a good
nice,
point.
But when you lie on it, you might actually feel it on your back, you know. So,
I like the point we mentioned about all this, of course, the generation focusing on overnight success. But as you mentioned, I think it's not just unique to the generation.
Mm.
You replace crypto NFT with Toto 4D, it's the same thing.
Yes, yes.
So I think every generation has that propensity to really pursue that overnight success. And of course, that aside, you would be looking more towards something more solid, more structured, which would be on skill sets.
Mm.
Skill set is something that you can develop, compound, and of course, bring it forward. For the young people out there who are new to the workforce, what do you think are the kind of skill sets that they may want to really focus on? It could be soft skills or on harder skills. Since they are young, they have time. What are some of your recommendations that you have for them? What are some of the success cases or even some of the pitfalls that you may have seen?
Yeah, I feel like in an ideal situation, you should have at least like one soft skill, one hard skill. So let's say you only have hard skills only. The problem is that when it comes to, let's say, marketing yourself or like presenting an idea or being a good communicator or even being a manager, you will struggle. And when that happens, you will find it very hard to progress.
Right.
Or if you're a business owner, you'll find it very hard to work with other people because stuff like communication, empathy, seeing other people's perspective, like these are all soft skills that are very, very valuable. And being able to see more than yourself, because I think when you don't have empathy, you just say, oh, it's me, you know, you only think about things from your perspective, that's going to make you very hard to work with. So I think soft skills is definitely very important. On the flip side, if you only have soft skills, you can make it by, and a lot of people get by like amazingly on soft skills, but I think having some hard skills will kind of back up your credibility on what you can actually do. So for example, myself, like I consider like copywriting, that's my hard skill. Having like a decent command of the English language, knowing like pop culture reference, I think these are all hard skills. Soft skills would be me being here, you know, networking with you guys, you know, potentially maybe next time we work together in some other way outside of this podcast.
Yeah.
So I think being able to market yourself. So
and also running your team, right? I mean, that's that can't be easy. Mm. That must be some skills that you've learned along the way, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think one of each will be great. Okay, what I'm trying not to do is be prescriptive of like what hard skill to do. Yeah. If I say like you should be a
data analyst,
you should be into computer science. But that doesn't take into account whether the person actually likes computer science, whether or not they have the aptitude for it.
Yeah.
So I prefer to be slightly more generic in my response. But I think soft skills is definitely applicable to a lot of people. Because I think soft skill is kind of how you will be a more pleasant person to work with.
I'm not sure, no, Agent. Do you really think everyone has the soft skill set? Some people don't, I
everyone,
think.
Okay, so not everyone comes with it naturally. But
you can learn
it? You should try to learn it at some point to become more likable, to reduce friction in the workplace.
Okay, lah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one way to look at it.
Hi, my name is Julie Yu, and I'm the host of the new season of The Climate Conversations. From chefs to scientists, join me as we get personal with the people driving change in sustainability. Look out for our episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
What did school not teach you about work that you wish you had known?
Oh my goodness. So when I was in uni, there was this class called Professional Practices. And what that class did was it taught you how to write an invoice, how to bill a client, what happens if there's a dispute, what are things like queue fees and things like all contractual stuff, right? That artists want no part of this stuff. We hate all this stuff, right? So it's great that they taught that. But I thought always what I was missing was to put me in a situation where I even need to write a contract. So they didn't teach me so much about like what the business world is like, what the reality is like. And 80% of the projects that you will do is not fun one. It's not like you go out there and then you are living intentionally and full of purpose. That's 20% if you're lucky. So I wish somebody had sort of sat me down and told me that most of it is not going to be fun, but if you know to expect it, it won't hit you so hard. And you understand that, okay, the real game out there is to be able to pick your battles. So in the ones that you do have some control over, sometimes you have to bargain for it. You say, hey, boss, okay, I'll do this thing for you, but can you give me 2 weeks to do this? I promise you, I'll do all this other stuff that I need to do. But just let me have some freedom of control over this, because this is low stakes for you.
Right.
But this is soft skills, right? Like, I need to negotiate. I need to know how to talk to my boss. So all this is soft skills combined with your hard skills to be able to carry it through and impress the boss. Then you get that buy-in. You get more trust for the future. Then you can pick some more. Then maybe from 80-20 become like 60-40, where 40% is like passion stuff. Because passion matters for us as artists, as creatives, but also for young people. I think that is a very prominent part of how they choose to think about work-life balance, and they want to have some degree of purpose and autonomy and feeling of direction that they can say in the workplace.
Right.
I think that's super important, though. Like, a realistic way to look at work, I feel, is not like I need to earn money, but like, what is a way in which I can solve problems for an organization?
Mm.
Because if you think about it from problem solving, it becomes very gratifying. Even if the time is not pleasant, I understand that I'm solving something that makes life better for something else, or I'm providing something that makes life a little bit better for somebody else.
Right.
And that will allow me to slog through the tough times. It's not about being happy at the workplace. It's about having something purposeful that you can work towards so that there's a point in doing something. I think thinking about it that way helps a lot. And also the money stuff, if you manage to get through all that and you become a really good problem solver, the money will come. Because if you're good at problem solving, right, and you apply it to the right areas where there is money, money will come to you. That's why I strongly... It sounds very privileged to say that.
I'm not guaranteeing it.
There's a lot of...
I like the message. It's very positive.
There's
a
lot of footnotes to this. Okay, so please don't say that. I say very easy, right? But really, like, I think problem solving is the key to everything. And problem solving is fun. That's what video games are. Sorry, I'm going on a weird tangent, but that's what video games are.
I'm enjoying this.
I was playing video games and like, why am I playing as a medieval knight in the Dark Ages, like in a place where I knew in historical, like, knowledge that it's not a fun time to be. Why am I choosing to do this virtually and killing people and fighting battles? I'm solving problems in an environment that is controlled. That gives me the satisfaction of telling me that, hey, you solve this problem, you get this new reward, you know? So that's what video games are. So like, if you can simulate that in the workplace, like, it becomes a lot more gratifying, I feel.
Okay.
Of course, that's like a big demand of the education system.
Yes,
for me, growing up, I wish there were more signposts in school to tell people that, you know, success is not just this one path. Not always just one right answer that, you know, you flip to the back of the assessment board. Oh, okay, yeah, I got the right answer.
The 10-year series.
Yeah, because I think that happened to like a lot of people in our generation. They tend to think in dichotomies. It's either like, yes, is it the model answer? If yes, then it's correct. If not, then it's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, back to Wei Chun's analogy about playing games. I play real-time strategy game, like one of those like strategy games. And there's so many ways to win, you know. You could focus on like the economy first. You can build up your resources, then destroy the enemy. You could kind of attack them early. Before they even realize what's happening. There are so many ways to cut it. And I wish diversity of success routes was something that we explored more in the education system. I'm not sure what it's like now, you know.
But yeah, I think they're trying very hard
to do that.
But it's also perception, right? Parents have to believe that, okay, if the kid doesn't do well, I have other ways to get him to where he wants to do what he wants to do. Yeah. So that sense of purpose.
And before we let you go, can you give our listeners one value that you hold dear to you about work and the one thing that drives you every day?
In life, I no longer seek happiness. I seek fulfillment. So it's not like I want to be on a path that makes me happy all the time. But instead, I want to be able to look back, even when I'm suffering, right? To understand that, hey, I've come pretty far and I like the path that I went down. So it's more about looking back and having gone a long way. So I seek satisfaction, not happiness.
Yeah. For me, it's about building up the ability to say no to bad opportunities. So this can happen either, you know, maybe you're born rich parents, you can say no to bad opportunities. You can save up money on your own, then you can say no to bad opportunities. You can acquire skills, be very in demand, then you can say no to bad opportunities. I think your responsibility to yourself is to always put yourself in a position where you can choose more options. Whether it's what option you choose, that's up to you. I think, yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did putting it together. As they say,
stay woke, salaryman. You can find the excellent work of Ray Ming and Wei Chun on thewokesalaryman.com. They also have a podcast and the most adorable merchandise. The research for this episode was done by Audrey Wan and Jacqueline Chan. The sound designer is Daniel Lee. And I'm Crispina Robert with my co-host Adrian Tan, signing off till we meet next week.